What's going on? You're listening to the Nerd News Network. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodds. Well, it's been a while, guys, but I am glad to be back here with you on the Nerd News Network, only on thisweekingeek.net. And, well, it's been an interesting week and a half. We're not going to talk about the big elephant in the room. We know how that turned out. And I guess we'll find out what happens come January 20th. But that's okay. That's about as political as I'm going to get on this show. It's, hell, if you've been watching my Facebook for the last week and a half, as I often refer to it as the dumpster fire, evidently someone is pouring, like, nitro onto that fire of late. And it's just been one interesting, and I use the word interesting in quotation marks, conversations over and over again. But to update you guys, if you're hearing this tonight on Tuesday, there will be a new rat-up tomorrow on Dragon Ball Z Xenoverse 2. I keep calling it Dragon Ball Z, it's Dragon Ball Xenoverse. I guess just force of habit. So that will be coming to us from Bandai Namco or Namco Bandai. I can never remember which it is, but either way, you get the gist of it. So in today's show, though, we're going to talk about some major movie news, some rumors, a very cool toy being introduced into the Toy Hall of Fame, an interesting story I saw just because it had the word vomit in it, and we're also going to have an interview with Shane from Arc Dream Publishing. These are the guys that hold the license to the Delta Green Call of Cthulhu RPG setting, more like the modern setting. So we'll drop in with Shane and myself a little bit later in the show. And I'm also going to give you my 5-minute overview and thoughts on Skyrim Special Edition now that I've had a couple weeks with it and have pretty much been playing it almost exclusively nonstop here on the show. So I guess let's kind of drop into the news of this week. And one of the coolest things that came out over the weekend was the Scarlett Johansson Ghost in the Shell trailer, where she stars as Major Motoko Kusanagi. This movie's been accused of whitewashing. And although I can see that point, she does look pretty cool as the Major. I'm not going to lie. The trailer, which came out over the weekend, nails a lot of the visuals, right? It looks a lot like the 1995 movie. They even got the really cool scene where she's dropping off the roof in her, like, nude suit, or where she's fighting the dude in the water, where he's got the super high, like, rapid fire machine gun, and she's got that optical cloaking technology. It looks pretty badass. So the guy who's doing this is Rupert Sanders. He's the same guy who did Snow White and the Huntsman. And the movie's being produced by Avian Area Rod, the same guys who did Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2 and Iron Man, also did Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. And Stephen Paul, who also worked on that, and Michael Costigan, who worked on Prometheus, and also one of the random guys who worked on Tekken, Tetsui Fujimura. And another guy whose name I'm not even going to begin to pronounce, but let's just say he's involved in Production IG, the same guys who produced the Ghost in the Shell television series and the movie way back when. So, watching this trailer, I gotta say I'm impressed. And if they can finally nail Hollywood, if Hollywood can finally nail a big Hollywood-style anime adaptation, maybe there's hope, because we've had movies like Dragon Ball Evolution, which was less than stellar, though for me it is admittedly a guilty pleasure. We have, I want to say Death Note's going the Netflix route, or it's going to be on TV or something like that. I'm not 100% sure. We've had Tekken. We've had, I'm just trying to think here of the other animes that have been adapted. See, myself, I'm holding out for 2 of them. Maybe 3 of them. I would love to see a big screen Cowboy Bebop. Do I think that would translate well? No. Though my dream, allow me to share this with you. Neon Genesis Evangelion, because there's no way you could do the entire series in one movie, but you could do up to, say, probably the introduction of, like, Rey, and where they shoot down the giant diamond in the sky with the giant sniper rifle. You could probably adapt the first 6-7 episodes into something, much like they have done with, like, some of the rebuild of Evangelion movies. I'd be okay with that. Or, if I could get, like, a 3-part trilogy based on either Attack on Titan or my personal favorite, I would love to see some sort of a Gundam movie made. And I'm talking, like, the old Universal Century stuff where it's, like, a real war movie as opposed to the ridiculous Gundam Wing sort of thing. Though Wing would be pretty cool to see. It's not gonna happen, though. So, this hits theaters on March 31st, 2017, and I want it to be good. I really do. I mean, they've nailed a lot of the Section 9 guys. They even have Bateau in the trailer, and Bateau's the guy with, like, the Coke bottle, bottle cap eyes would be the best way to describe him. But they actually got it to look pretty okay, actually. So I'm very interested to see how they're going to pull the rest of this movie off. I'm hoping they have those really cool Tachiyama tanks or whatever the hell they're called. Though not as much standalone complex where they're talky and cutesy. I want the big menacing 1995 movie ones where they, like, shred the Major and, like, kick her ass. That would be pretty friggin' cool, so... What are your thoughts on the trailer? I've embedded it below. Would love to hear your thoughts. So feedback at thisweekingeek.net. As always, I look forward to hearing from you. Okay, so the next story we're going to talk about, this one I think, this is a rumor at this point, but does make a lot of sense. So Disney has made a lot of big moves over the last couple years. Back in 2009, they bought up Marvel. Then in 2012, they bought up Indiana Jones, which made George Lucas like $4 billion. And the company has been getting consistently bigger and bigger because hits like Star Wars The Force Awakens, Rogue One is tracking to be huge. But they also own things like Pixar, Star Wars, Marvel, The Muppets, all of its amazing franchises. They own ABC, stuff like that. And they have all the really cool stuff under Marvel and Netflix, like Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Daredevil, etc. So there's talk that Disney's looking into buying Netflix, because AT&T bought up Time Warner, and it looks like Disney kind of wants to level the playing field. And it's not like Netflix doesn't have its own stable of amazing shows. Like I said, the before mentioned Marvel shows, but you've also got House of Cards, Orange is the New Black, Stranger Things, Making a Murderer, what was that, Lilyhammer, stuff like that. So there's a lot of really good reasons for Disney to want to pick up Netflix. Outside of its amazing content, its library is huge. The article, which I'm actually reading this, credits Netflix for helping keeping Breaking Bad alive and it reaching its conclusion because people just kept binge-watching it. So I'm kind of wondering if Disney will do this, because I think it's a no-brainer. Like, if you look at the amount of Disney content out there, if you told me for $10 a month I would get access to a bunch of movies and a large chunk of the Disney Vault or their animation from now till the 1930s, I would be down to pay that. If there was a Disney only Netflix that had all their cartoons from the 80s and 90s and had all the movies and all the sequels, yeah, here's my money, take it. I would so do that, because I think not a lot of people buy physical media anymore. And that's the thing. I mean, DVD and Blu-ray sales have been declining for a while. I remember reading that somewhere. Don't ask me to cite a source, but I think I saw it on like ETC show or something similar to that. Either way, sales are down. So if everyone is streaming the content, they can control what you see, but they can also introduce new series too, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it'd be so cool to go back and watch old episodes of the Mickey Mouse Club, or maybe they could launch Disney exclusive series. Like, hell, they could bring back Tron Legacy if they wanted to. They could bring back like a Netflix exclusive DuckTales or something like that. Although that gets rebooted, I want to say next year. There's stuff like Quack Pack, Chippendale Rescue Rangers. There's so much they could do. There's such a rich catalog of bat content there that they're simply just not using. So I'm kind of hoping that Disney does buy Netflix and does increase the bat catalog, because I think it's a good thing. Okay, next story. This one I think is pretty cool. So Dungeons & Dragons, one of my favorite things in the whole wide world, joins the National Toy Hall of Fame at the Strong Museum of Play. So this game has been around for like 42 years, give or take. D&D lead designer Mike Merles said recently when this game got inducted, D&D has become a rite of passage for children of a creative temperament. It's incredible to think that what started as the marriage of tabletop war games and pulp fantasy novels has become the iconic storytelling pastime for multiple generations. I think that's really cool, using D&D as like a creative outlet. In fact, even going back to my own memories, I remember playing it back even in grade school with my friend Jamie. I must have started in grade 6 or 7, but I've heard of kids starting even earlier than that. I mean, I could even see kids playing D&D today in schools, depending, but I don't know. I'm not as well connected to the youth of today. But definitely stuff in like high school, because I know Pathfinder still sells ridiculously well. But D&D has always been the gold standard when it comes to fantasy role-playing. Sure, you've got your Savage Worlds, you've got your Pathfinder, but D&D, people know, you know what Dragonlance is, you know what Forgotten Realms is. You even probably, if I said the word Ravenloft, somewhere in the back of your mind, you might even think, is that like a D&D thing? It's become such a connection with the creative pastime that, you know, just people know what it is. And to see it finally in the Toy Hall of Fame, I think is pretty cool. I kind of want to see what else made it in this year in terms of toys. It also joins the Fisher-Price Little People and the Swing in terms of what made it into the Toy Hall of Fame this year. But it also joins other recipients such as the Atari 2600, the Baby Doll, the Ball, that's right, literally just a ball, and the Alphabet Blocks. And some of these were inducted as early as 2003, which I think is pretty cool. In fact, I don't think this thing is actually all that far away from me. I want to say it's over in Rochester, New York, so it's a good, like, 4 or 5 hour drive from me. I should really make the pilgrimage out there to go see it at some point. So I hope the version of D&D they have out there is the original white box, or maybe it's like a second edition book. I don't know. It's too bad Gary Gygax didn't live long enough to see his creation create such a legacy that it has. I mean, obviously it's influenced my life tremendously with the Terrible Warriors podcast that I helped produce on the other channel that I work with here. So yeah, 42 years finally in the National Toy Hall of Fame with Fisher-Price's Little People and the Swing. Never going to get tired of saying that. Just sounds weird. Okay, so we're actually going to kind of continue along here with the RPG track. We're going to take a small break, and we're going to join a conversation that I had with Shane Ivey from Arc of Dream Publishing about Delta Green and Call of Cthulhu. And when we come back, we're going to talk about my kicker story this week involving vomit, And we're also going to talk about Skyrim Special Edition for the Xbox One. So we'll be right back, right after this.
And now it's time for another special feature.
Welcome back to the Nerd News Network. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd. As you guys know, I have quite the hand in the role-playing game world. I've met a lot of really interesting people, and I've played a lot of really interesting games. Some of them, like Golden Sky Stories, where you play little cutesy animals and more of a cuddly over combat. I've played anime heroes and heroines and all that sort of thing. And I've even played games involving ancient lurking horrors. One of the cool games that I've always wanted to try, and we'll be playing on an upcoming series on Terrible Warriors, is a game called Delta Green. You might be wondering what that is. Well, think of it as if Call of Cthulhu met Jason Bourne, or if the Great Old Ones met Jack Bauer, so to speak. Sort of a more combat-oriented version of the Call of Cthulhu world, though not really, in a sense. I'm actually joined by Shane Ivey. He's the president over at Arc Dream Publishing. And these guys now hold the license to Delta Green, and I want to welcome Shane to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
So Shane, explain to me, what is Delta Green, and what sets it apart from the original Call of Cthulhu, where I play antiquarians and librarians?
Sure. So Delta Green is a modern-day setting for Cthulhu Mythos role-playing, horror role-playing. And so you're generally playing characters who are maybe federal agents or some kind of professional investigators. Sometimes they're soldiers, sometimes they're scientists or doctors or what have you. But you're playing characters who are kind of drawn into this really, really secretive, black-than-black organization that is people who know about these really deadly supernatural horrors and are sending you to go deal with them and save people from them and obscure them, because generally they're so dangerous that even awareness of them is itself deadly and kind of spreads the danger. And that's the gist of it. You go on these really terrifying investigations, generally with nowhere near as much support and resources as you think you ought to have, because compartmentalization and secrecy are just as paramount as confronting the threat, because they're part of confronting the larger threat.
Now, one of the things I've often wondered about Delta Green is, where do you guys draw a lot of the inspiration for the scenarios and stuff like that?
Well, a lot of places. A lot of things just come out of modern day, you know, out of the news. You know, there's it seems like every single day there's something going on in technology or in politics, or sort of the sort of fringes of technology and politics, especially that are really quick to spark your imagination. If you're in the mode of how can I create a really scary, suspenseful horror adventure out of something? So on the Facebook feed, the Twitter feed, just about every single day we post one or two links to stories online that are solid scenario seeds, where you can take all the elements that are there in the real world and just start kind of tweaking them, you know, and saying, what if this, you know, and then let your imagination open up to something that's really spooky and gives you chills and sort of fold it together into the adventure. So there's a lot of the real world will do an awful lot of the work for you when it comes to horror.
Now, from what I understand, you guys haven't always had the license to Delta Green. It's actually bounced around. It's actually been around for quite some time. So walk me through the path how you guys got involved with it.
Sure. So the current team that's in charge is me and Dennis Detweller, who's my partner with ArcStream Publishing. Dennis was one of the three original creators of the Delta Green property back in the 90s, along with John Scott Tynes and Adam Scott Glancy. And they were working for Pagan Publishing at the time. Well, years ago, Tynes retired, so to speak. He's working in video games now and has been for a long time, and he's not doing very much at all with role-playing games. But we've still been working with Scott Glancy all along. Dennis Detwiller and I set up Arcstream Publishing, you know, a long time ago. So it was a pretty easy thing. You know, over the years, we've worked with Scott and with Pagan Publishing to create new Delta Green books to go with the ones that Pagan put out back in the mid and late 90s that won just award after award and are still some of the most highly regarded works of gaming ever created. And so we kind of, you know, we added to that library, and then we kind of talked, when we started talking over and deciding it's really time, right? It's time to make this a current day thing instead of just adding on to things that were fundamentally built for 20 years ago. It was just sort of natural to just make that an Arc Dream thing from the ground up, get the license from the guys, and then bring them on as contributors and advisors. So the whole team is still involved with it. But it's under our, you know, under our aegis, under the Arcstream Publishing banner now.
So what are some of the things that maybe have been updated over the last, say, 20 years?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's kind of funny. For a long time, before we put the new game out, we had a lot of people who were exposed to Delta Green when it first came out, back in the days of the X-Files, right? And a couple of really prominent parts of the Delta Green setting had to do with, gray aliens and Majestic 12 and all those X-Filesy things. And so we had a lot of people, I mean, that wasn't the only thing, but it was prominent. So we had a lot of people that kind of were skeptical and thinking, well, geez, is this thing going to be relevant anymore? You know, you're bringing it into the 2010s now. Nobody gives a flip about grays anymore. As if that were the only thing that made it tick. And it was kind of funny because all along, those of us who were creating it were just kind of, you know, just shaking our heads, because to us, the things that are essential to Delta Green that have to do with the sort of the possibilities inherent in, you know, in abusing authority and in the dangers of using authority for the best of reasons to exceed your grasp, you know, all of those themes are way, way more apropos today than they ever were in the 1990s. And so it hasn't been hard at all to kind of upgrade or update the core of the setting and what characters do and what's expected of them and some of the challenges they face. The real challenge was just getting the game rules to kind of fit that and getting the game rules just right, because we wanted the rules to be easily compatible with everything we've ever done and with Call of Cthulhu, but also really, really drill into what makes Delta Green characters tick and what makes their interaction with the setting unique and different from standard Call of Cthulhu or any other role-playing game.
Now, what are some of the products that people can look forward to coming out in 2017?
In 2017, we're going to have the full core rulebook for the role-playing game first. And that is to say, we've already published the Agent's Handbook, which is sort of a player-facing version of the rules. It has all the rules you need to play and create characters and run the game and everything else. And then we're publishing the core rulebook of Delta Green. It's going to include all of that material from the Agent's Handbook, plus an equal amount of material that's built for game masters to create adventures and create scenarios and monsters and spells and alien technology and the whole nine yards. So that's in the works now, and we'll have that out in PDF in the next couple of months. And then beyond that, we have about half a dozen books that are going to start coming together concurrently. We're all of our energy are focused on the core rule book right now, because that's so fundamental. We want to make sure it's absolutely perfect. And then when that's final, then our attention turns to a book about Pisces, which is a secret organization in the UK and includes information on international agencies that Delta Green agents in the U.S. might have to deal with and confront. A book about a campaign of scenarios in New York City dealing with this really deadly occult crime syndicate. A campaign book about the King in Yellow mythology and characters that are drawn into kind of interacting with Carcosa and with the sort of breaking down of reality that involves. And a big book called Deep State that sort of delves into the secret parts of the U.S. government that have kind of been built up over the years in the Delta Green setting, and some of which are useful to Delta Green agents and some of which are catastrophically dangerous and a lot of which are both. So we've got a lot of really good material that we're bringing together.
I gotta say, it's definitely gonna be the year of dread, the year of Cthulhu 2017. Gotta say, it's gotta be a lot of stuff that I'm gonna be looking forward to, Shane. So I really want to thank you for taking time to speak with us today on This Week in Geek. If people want to find out more information about Delta Green, where would they have to go?
DeltaGreen.com. There's a with or without a hyphen in between Delta and Green. And you can find links to all of the games that are available, to all the PDFs and adventures that you can download, and links to pre-order all the big outstanding things that we have coming.
So, guys, be sure to check out Delta Green. It sounds like it's going to be a fantastic game. I know we'll be playing it on Terrible Warriors at some point during 2017. I've got some ideas for some scenarios, and I may have to dig out my old X-Files stuff to kind of maybe rejiggle some ideas. But hey, I'll just look at the current headlines. I'm sure there's something screwed up I could maybe drag Cthulhu or Hester into. So anyway, guys, that's going to do it for me. Until next time, we'll be right back right here on the Nerd News Network, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Hey, we are back here on This Week in Geek's Nerd News Network. Big thanks to Shane and Arc Dream. We actually spoke a little bit after the interview. We actually may take a look at one of his other games called Puppetland, which evidently involves a demented Punch and Judy, and Punch is taken over. It's weird. It sounds, frankly, really, really fucked up. But it totally sounds like something the Terrible Warriors would be down to play. So hopefully we'll get a copy of that in a few weeks and we'll play it next year. So what are we going to be talking about that involves vomit? Well, let me tell you. So evidently, if you're a fisherman, you can make millions off of whale vomit. You might be asking, what the hell am I talking about? Well, a couple of fishermen found 176 pounds of ambergris. Ambergris is known as the floating gold that is expelled by sperm whales and is evidently prized by the fragrance industry. So, perfume and shit. So anyway, so a couple of fishermen in Oman came across this floating gold. And what it is, it's this intestinal secretion called ambergris. Like I said, it's puke. And this thing could sell for potentially close to $3 million. You might be asking why. Well, what happens is there's a key ingredient inside this whale puke that basically helps scents linger longer on human skin. It's so weird that they found this. Now, evidently, a guy in Saudi Arabia has already put an offer in for this stuff. He's offered them, 1.8 million reals, which works out to about $2.8 million in the current exchange rates. It's just ridiculous. And just to give you a hint on how valuable this stuff is, someone found one that was worth $70,000 back in 2013, and another one was found by an 8-year-old back in 2012, and it went for $65,000. There was another guy in England was walking with his dog and found $180,000 worth of whale puke. So, hang it at the beach. Find whale puke. Get rich. Who knew? According to my wife here, who's just kind of piping in my ear, evidently there was an episode of Bob's Burgers involving this. So that's weird. Anyway, so as we begin to close out the show, I did promise you a mini rad or rad in 5 minutes. And what am I going to be talking about for this? I'm going to be talking about Skyrim Special Edition from Bethesda, specifically on the Xbox One. So this came out just towards the end of October. We've waited 5 long years to know the glory of what the PC Master Race is known for almost all that time, mods. So what is Skyrim Special Edition? Well, it's the exact same game you played back in 2011 with all the DLC up to the most recent patch, and mod support. That's pretty much about it. I mean, the textures are improved, there's volumetric lighting now, or as they call them, god rays, stuff like that. The game runs pretty smooth. I haven't encountered any real problems on Xbox One. All your exploits still work. I've been doing the restoration glitch, which makes me virtually a god when it comes to my armor and smithing and enchanting. Let's just say I've got weapons that do millions upon millions of damage. But more importantly, it's getting into the mods, which are really cool. And PC people have known this for a long time. But there's new followers. There's one called Lucy who follows you around. Evidently, you can marry at some point. She's fully voiced. She's got unique dialogue to what's going on. So a lot of work went into this. There's even one piece of DLC. I didn't get a chance to get into this one too much, but it's called The Forgotten City. People have said it looks like Bethesda built it. That's how good it is. That's how well thought out it is. And there's just little things like that. There's also tons of cheat stuff, but there's stuff that makes quality of life better, like for crafting, how you can, like, you now get experience for tanning leather, you get experience for crafting arrows. If you find any gear out in the world, you can melt it down, stuff like that. Like, it's really kind of cool just what everyone has been able to accomplish. I mean, it's a little different from Fallout, whereas if you download, say, an audio mod and it's a radio station here, I had someone randomly put Toe Jam and Earl music in the Skyrim, which is a little strange. But hey, who am I to judge? There's a lot of things done right. However, though, the Xbox One has the tremendous advantage here because the Xbox One is able to use external assets, which means through your Bethesda.net account, you can download 5 gigs of mods and do whatever the hell you please with them. On PlayStation 4, you are limited to 1 gig, maybe 2, and you can't use any external assets. So that's no custom textures, that's no custom voice, no custom nothing. But if it's in the game right now, yeah, you can do that. If someone builds a new village out of existing assets and splices it together, yeah, sure, I think that works. But in terms of anything else, nah, you're shit out of luck. And that sucks. And no one's quite sure why. I know Bethesda's come out and said, until, you know, Sony comes out and helps us out here, there's not a whole hell of a lot we can do. We're always working with our partners to blah, 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 blah. But still, it is pretty cool to be able to play this game on next generation consoles. I'm looking forward to getting all my achievements again. This is one of the first games I ever got 100% on for my 360. I think, yeah, this was my second game. My first game was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Danger of the Ooze or something, because it was really, really, really simple. This one, I think I've gotten like half the achievements. But the really cool thing about this is, a game like Skyrim is so huge, I'm still discovering stuff I haven't discovered in 5 years. So I'm still having a blast. My wife has once again become the Skyrim widow, but that's how the cookie crumbles. So can I recommend picking it up? If you missed it the first time around, absolutely. Even if you didn't, if you want just something fun, just to mess around with mods, it's worth it. I really do. I really think it's a lot of fun for console players. I really do. If you've got this on PC, if you already have all the DLC, you got the special edition anyway, because it was provided to you for free. Although I know they're having some problems. I think like the PC version, there's a problem with developing a new edition of the launcher or something for the mod community. I don't know. My friend Billy would know more about it than I do, but I thought it was worth mentioning anyway. So that's going to do it for this edition of Nerd News Network. Next time, not sure it's coming up. I know me and Blanchard and Ryan are going to be doing another wrestling show because Survivor Series and NXT TakeOver Toronto is this weekend, which I'm really sad I'm not going, but I'm doing my physiotherapy. I'm working on becoming bigger, better, stronger. So maybe next time. So until next time, guys, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying live for your Die Hard, and I'll catch you guys again right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat f***.
Okay, I'm good, Geico.
Holy shit! Oh my gosh! Freak! Die! Holy crap! Whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Prono Bozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.